Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends and family, and welcome to Straight Talk. And in the words of the late, great James Brown, Straight Talk, this is a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl. So, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome you to a very special evening here on Straight Talk. This is the show made for men, by men, and I am a co-host, and I always have a co-pilot. Say hello to everyone, Blair. Blair Nash is my co-pilot.
Man, I was sitting here in horror. I was thinking you was about to sing for a second. I was like, oh, Lord, I'm about to lose everybody listening. Golly. But, you know, you can't do it. You get one line and you stop there. That's how people who can't sing, that's how they do. They get one line, maybe two, and then they move on. So I'm cool with that. Move on. I was like, go in a full-fledged Barry Manilow mode. I'm like, golly, not tonight, brother, not tonight.
It's a good thing James Brown is not around. He might sue me.
Yeah, I was like,
butchering his song.
Nah, hello, everybody. I hope everyone has had a great week. Thank you for listening to the show. And I hope everyone's doing well.
Good. So good week, Blair. You guys getting warm in Ohio yet? We're starting to warm up. It's like spring is coming.
It is finally warm here. I mean, warm is a kind of a relative term. Yeah, in the Ohio area. I mean, it's, you know, warm is not warm that it would be in, you know, in California, Florida, and Texas, but it's warmer.
True.
And as in typical Ohio fashion, I think it's going to be back in the 40s later on this week. So I don't know if
bring out the backless shirts quite
yet, ladies. Just, you know, hold off and, you know, we'll have warmer weather. But right now we're kind of in that real kind of strange season where it's like, you know, when you go into the office in the morning, you know, when you get to work during the day, it's like 80 degrees. And when you get out late, 6 o'clock at night, it's like 50. So,
you know, it's
getting better. I mean, you know, given the fact that it was like, you know, 20 degrees just 2 weeks ago, you know, I'll take 60 all day long.
No complaints.
Oh, wow. You guys can have 50. Wow, that's pretty good.
How are things on the East Coast? What's the weather like?
Well, we get your weather. Apparently, we get it watered down, though. So, you know, we've had some 40 and 50, but maybe one day it's 60. But it looks like we're going to be okay. But for me, second week of April, that's when winter's over. I've seen it snow 18 inches in April. So,
okay.
I enjoy it as it comes.
Right, exactly, yeah. You know, looking forward to the entire 2019, but especially to the warmer weather. This is a harsh winter. We typically don't have harsh winters in the Ohio that much. We've been very fortunate the past few years, but this one was a hard. This one was rough. So we're moving past it, though.
So, what do you think of our topic today, Blair? So I know we put it up as a statement. But really, I'm kind of asking people, do you know how to transform your intimate relationship into a powerful partnership? That's what we're talking about tonight. So it's all about partnership. I know a lot of you ladies, some of the ladies have personally told me that we're a little bit rough on the women. And this is a show by guys, and they've also backed that statement with it. You're rough on the ladies, and I know it's a man's show and a man's point of view. So we've said it before. We've listened to the ladies for decades, and men really haven't had a platform. So here we are with the platform. Except tonight,
right?
I really want to hear from people who understand partnership. You know, there's so many people out there with relationships, they pick someone so they don't have to be alone. It's almost like a person's worst nightmare is to be alone, and they feel like they're going to be bored, or they don't know what to do with themselves if they don't have someone around. It's almost like having someone around is a distraction from kind of from yourself. So, I mean, and that's a whole nother conversation by itself. But people generally don't go into relationships thinking about what they're going to build. And you and I have spoken a lot about how the affluent people, the marriage rates haven't dropped, their divorce rates are extremely low. So what is it they know that most people with, around the world or in the U.S. don't really understand? Because they are getting married and making it work. And there are people who have written all kinds of books about how people who are millionaires have extremely low divorce rates. It's not about money. It's about what brings them together. And and when you read the stories, the case studies, and I'd like to talk about some of those tonight, you hear that they go through highs and lows and their marriage is stable, they're solid. So what is it that's happening? And then what is it that that couples who really understand partnership, it's like I've probably killed this statement that a relationship is a team sport. And if you don't understand that, if you're in a relationship and trying to do it on your own or competing with your partner, which makes it even worse, you really don't get the benefit of what we're saying that affluent people are getting. They're getting a real benefit of coming together. That's why they continue to marry. And there's no wealthy man. There's no MGTOW for wealthy men.
right. Yeah, absolutely. What I'm trying to say is I would attribute to. I mean, for anyone that doesn't know me, that you know, for any of our new listeners that are tuning in, you know, I'm an author. I'm a coach, and I also have a following on social media. I say that to say, whenever I try to tell specifically a lot of our women about a lot of the struggles, a lot of the challenges that face not only just women, but Black women specifically, whenever I try to speak on that, whether it's in a book, whether it's on my social media page, whether it's on this podcast, you're always kind of met with kind of this reluctance, like, you know, Blair, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what, you don't understand. You don't see it my way. You don't see it how women see it. And I'm like, no. I see it very, very clearly. I know exactly what I'm talking about. I may be wrong every once in a while, but I know exactly what I'm talking about. And I just want women to understand before they have to go through the lumps and the bruises and the contusions that this is, you know, this whole dating thing, this whole relationship thing, it's more than just, are you cute enough for some man to, you know, make you his wife? It's more than that. It's, first of all, it's a strategy, and it's a strategy that you kind of like a strategy on how to get rich. You don't luck into getting rich. You have to be very deliberate and very strategic on how to get rich and get wealthy. And so if you understand that, then, you know, you have to understand that there are going to be things that you have to do, things that you have to compromise and sacrifice on in order to get to a certain goal. If I say to you, how do you become rich? You, if you don't say the word sacrifice or compromise in it, you're lost. Because what you're saying essentially is, I can go and the moment I see a TV I want, or the moment I see a pair of, you know, high-end shoes that I want, or the moment that I see anything that's going to, you know, a vacation, you know, something to go, you know, do with my friends or whatever, anytime that there's going to be something happening, you're going to get off course. And that's where I think a lot of our women specifically have the struggle, because they don't understand that you have to be very deliberate, very specific, very just on point to get to a certain station in this situation. It's not by luck. It's not by, you know, well, if I move somewhere where they, you know, where more cuter guys are at, then everything is going to work out. That's not how it works. And I just, you know, me and you do talk about this, Ted. You know, it's not only is it exhausting, but it's disheartening to speak with women after the situation has kind of blown up in their, you know, kind of blown up around them. And they're saying, you know what? Yeah, I get it now. And what I say to them is, I want you, but, and much as I want you to get it and see it and say and get the moment, I want to be able to be that person who's in your ear before you have to go through that. Because even if you go through those situations and you, you know, if you date a guy and nothing happens, you don't get pregnant and nothing bad happens, you still lose a little bit of yourself. You still lose, because what happens is more 9-10 times you're going to go into the next relationship and you're now going to be in a scenario where you say to yourself, you know what, I gave all such and such and such to Kevin or Jamal. I'm not going to do that again. And so you kind of turn a little bit of yourself off. What that does is makes you less and less available to the next person. So what we do, and the whole reason I think we created this podcast, Ted, was to help women to see things, you know, more deliberately, more clearly, that they're not seeing, you know, from just, you know, from just their, you know, the stuff that they have out there. So that's just my thoughts on it.
But when you were saying sacrifice, shoes, or all those other things, that sounds really more a matter of discipline. Because if you have to sacrifice those things, that's like saying I want to be an Olympic athlete, but I need to eat apple pie all day long. And I feel like I have to sacrifice apple pie. That's just a matter of discipline. So if you don't have the discipline required for anything, I mean, why would someone choose you to be on their team? And I don't care what the team is, if it's a sport team or a love team. Some guy once told me he was dating a woman, and she asked him to help her pay her rent. She only had part of it. She was $750 short. And
how much
short? Said, well, what? $750 short. So, yeah, this
That's
is over here
rent.
In New York.
$750?
Not in New Jersey. I'm like, I could walk to Manhattan.
I know, I'm just like,
God, here.
Right.
All right, $750, man, that gets you a bathroom.
So he asked,
what happened? You know, are you always short on rent? She said, no, I was walking past the shoe store, and I saw these shoes, and they had my name on them, so I spent my rent, part of my rent money to buy the shoes. So I need you to pay the other part of my rent. He blocked her number on his phone and just said that I'm never dealing with that. So,
wow.
Right. So,
wow, that's
the problem.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think that's part of what we deal with as far as the entitlement in relationships, in that we think, I did this and I did that and whatever. Now I want someone to kind of bail me out of my situation. That's not how life works. You know, real life says, you know, you probably going to have to go to your office, you know, not your office, your rental office, and talk to them people and say, hey, so here's what happened, et cetera, et cetera. And that you don't really have a bailout plan of someone who can give you, I mean, $750, I understand, yeah, you can't really get much here in Ohio for $758. I'm just saying the fact of that's pretty much most of the rent. You know, that's, I mean, $750, I mean, if you say, hey, I'm short $150, a person like, but $750, you know, that's pretty much most people's 1 week salary. So that's a lot to ask for. So, but
hey,
that's neither here nor there. But yeah,
I mean, when you look at someone like that in money management and partnership, so you know all of these things matter. So here's what Blair and I would like to offer. This is a very special show, and we're making a very open invitation to everyone calling. This invitation will apply to someone who's not listening. Call them and tell them to get on the show, because what we're inviting you to do, two things. One, if you have a great partnership with your significant other, whether you're married or not married, but you're together and you know you have a great partnership, we want you to call. We want to hear, we'd like you to share with people what you believe made your relationship a partnership, and not just people who are together to make kids and go to the movies. And the other thing is, if you are in a relationship or a past relationship that went bad, so a current relationship that you know it's not partnership, you think maybe it's possible for it, but you just don't know how to bridge that gap because you think love will save the day and do it all for you, and you're finding out that that's not happening, we would like you to call us and give us your most pressing relationship challenge so that we can help you bridge that gap and build the kind of partnership that you want. And we're saying that there's what Diana Ross said, ain't no mountain high. There's no relationship big enough. relationship wide, no problem big enough or wide enough or all the words in that song. And we will support you. I mean, understanding that, you know, we've used up a few minutes for the show, but we're inviting you to call in and drop your problem on our lap, and we will support you. So,
right.
Before we take a call, some things I'd like people to think about. So when you come together with someone, or even before you meet someone, it's like you're an individual, you're inviting someone into your world. So what is it you want to build? You know, these are questions to ask yourself. How well do you know yourself? What is it you want to build? What are you committed to? What do you stand for? So those are some ways to know yourself. And it also helps you understand what kind of partner you want. Now, there are relationships, and you hear them. People are really not thinking about building a team. It's kind of analogous, and I'm going to give a ridiculous example. Imagine you have a football team. You have an offensive lineman who's 6'6", 330 pounds, and they put him on the line. You have a quarterback. He's 6'3", he's 225 pounds. He can throw that ball 100 yards with accuracy. And when they go out on the field to play, that damn lineman, he really always wanted to be a quarterback. So when the ball is snapped, he's trying to take the ball out the quarterback's hand so he can have the light. You better believe that team is dysfunctional, and they're going to lose every single game, except there are couples who function that way. They're competing with one another. And they lose. And if they have children, their teams lose. The children lose even more. So we want to talk to you about things that work. And if we look at it, and that's men or women, we invite you. But we always hear about these titans, and we always hear about what men are supposed to do. But Blair, we talk about this all the time, about how men know that they're responsible, how to treat women. And but you know what we don't hear? We don't hear about the women of these titans. Like, take Henry Ford, for example. That guy worked in a machine shop. He wasn't the smartest guy in the machine shop. He was very shy.
Right.
There was no reason for him to become Henry Ford that we know him to become. What Henry Ford had was Mrs. Ford. And people don't realize how much of an influence and contribution that she was to his life. Apparently, she saw something in him and understood how to pull it out of him. And that's how we know Henry Ford to be who he is. There are lots of these titans like Andrew Carnegie, Rockefeller, even if you look at Bill Gates now. These guys married one woman and stayed with that woman. But in the case of Henry Ford, you know, all these decades we've heard women talk about what's wrong with men, but we don't really hear them talk about, well, what kind of woman do you have to be married to a titan? Because some women may actually be married to a guy who's a titan, except they're telling the guy, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, or you've never done that. I mean, imagine telling Henry Ford,
you don't know what you're talking about when he says, I'm going to build this assembly line. You could easily say you've never done this. Thomas Edison, his wife said, man, when he was on to something, it was like he just zoned out, almost locked himself in the room. He and Einstein did that. But Thomas Edison, imagine if his wife was like, you don't know what you're talking about. The guy said, he failed at making the light bulb. He took over 10,000 attempts to make it work. I mean, you know, people, right. Common sense would say 100 times, hey, man, give it up. It's not going to work. 1,000 times. Uh-huh. Now, imagine if his wife would have said, you know, you need to wake up. And we don't know if that happened, but in all the interviews with her, she understood the kind of focus and the vision that he had and how to support him. So when we look at Henry Ford, we look at Thomas Edison, Rockefeller, Carnegie, even Bill Gates, even Steve Jobs, these men
right.
had women who knew how to support them. And there's tons of research out there about, you know, the kinds of relationships these people have and why their divorce rate is so low. So kind
right.
of in the background, you know, do women really understand how to be a partnership with someone that's super successful? And when you look at
yeah.
Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk has two divorces, technically three. He married his second wife twice. But when you read their interviews, they interesting women and what it takes to be with a guy who's kind of has an out-of-this-world vision. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to shut up. I'd like to hear from our callers.
Well, let me say this real quick. First of all, the call-in number is 323-642-1387, 323-642-1387. I think, I'll take a call here in just a moment, but I want to just say this. I think what's happening, and, you know, you tell me what you think, Ted. I think what we're seeing is a reluctance for a lot of women to take in information that could be helpful to them. And I think because what's happened for so long is the narrative has been pointed towards men are the ones who screw up. You know, black men need to do this, black men need to do that. They need to, you know, do this. And there are a lot of things we need to do, no question. I'm not disputing that one at all. But I think what's happened is the narrative has been put on what black men are or are not doing, and it's always been a negative spin. Whether, you know, black men are incarcerated, black men are, you know, selling drugs, black men don't take care of their children, black men sleep with all these women, et cetera, et cetera. What you're seeing, and it's so, if you don't see it, you're blind. What you're seeing is a tremendous shift in where this blame, and I don't even really want to call it blame, but where the focus, I should say, is going towards. And I think what's happening with women is they're not accustomed to it. They're not used to it because, again, for generations, literally, for decades, women have been able to kind of, you know, focus everything about what's wrong with the black community on black men. It all rests on the feet of black men until black men kind of got smart with it and kind of got a little bit, you know, some things behind them where they started realizing, like, oh, wow. And they start looking at the facts and the statistics, and they say, wait a minute, this is not all of our fault. Again, I'm not, you know, saying that black men aren't accountable at all. But what I think is happening is black men are finally starting to get ganged up, and they're saying to themselves, wait a minute, we are not alone in this. And matter of fact, we are not the main culprit in why we are where we are as a people. And I think what's happening is because our women have been able to shift that narrative for so long, it's now something that black men are just kind of, I mean, you know, pretty much all you see are a lot of black men just talking about, I can't believe that these, you know, that our black women are doing X, Y, Z, and they're doing this, and they have this going on, and they have that going on. And so I think what's going to have to happen, and this, I said this a long time ago, and some black women are cool with it and others aren't, but I think what's going to have to happen is there's just going to have to be a level of humility that happens where our women say to themselves, you know what, yes, yes, we are wrong. We don't know how to do this whole thing by ourselves, and do it in a way that's very, you know, and do it in a way that is very, you know, in a way of humility. Because just like anything that you're trying to get over, if you're trying to, you know, get over alcohol, or if you're trying to get over drugs or whatever, you don't come to someone and say, I'm ready to get help, in a mean fashion, in a nasty fashion. You have to come with a level of humility that says, yes, I realize I've messed up a lot of my relationships. Yes, I realize I've, you know, caused a lot of pain to my family. I've lost my, you know, I've lost my home. My children won't speak to me, et cetera, et cetera. And until that happens, where you know, our women come and say, this is where we are, and yes, we're willing to listen, we're going to keep going in circles. And I don't know if a lot of them are ready to listen. I mean, we've had conversations here the past even few weeks where we've tried to, you know, point them in the right direction and show them, like, where things are. And even still, a lot of them are just kind of turn their noses up and say, well, you know, that's what the stats say, but I know what I know. And it's like, okay. So I think that's where we have a lot of our struggle, is the acceptance of the – number one is, again, using the illustration of an addict. You have to admit that you are actually wrong. You know, not a, well, you know, what about black men too, but admit that there's wrong in our culture. And until that happens, we're going to be in a standstill.
Yeah, my only concern with that is that, so I was there in the 60s during those riots. I mean, literally there. And there were different conversations. This new narrative, it literally is it was not always there. So I think if you're really going to solve anything, you can't do it from the micro. You have to take the macro. And black women didn't invent that conversation. And what I find is amazing is that I've done a lot of work with CEOs. Most of them have been men. But I've worked with women. I've had clients who are women CEOs. And these women have a board of directors that companies trade on a stock exchange. And then I recall one conversation, a woman said she feels a little guilty because the men who are right under her get to work at like 7:30. And she gets there later because she has a huge commitment to being a good mother. She had two daughters, and they were young, and she took them before she went to work. Her husband was a professional, and she still wanted to be a mother, even though she was a CEO. So she wasn't competing. She wasn't bashing her husband and saying, you need to do this, do it. She was the CEO of a company, and she was a mother. A lot of people may not know a woman by the name of Angela Arendt. Currently she's the head of retail for Apple Computer. She was the CEO of Burberry. And when they interviewed her as CEO of Burberry, like Apple stole her from, they poached her from Burberry. She's actually leaving this April from Apple. She's been there 5 years. And they did an interview with this woman, Angela. And when she told them, she said, she kept repeating throughout the interview, I understand what my priorities are. My first priority is to be a good wife. My second is to be a good mother. And the third is to be a good CEO. She kept repeating that over and over. That's that my husband is my first, my daughters are second, and my job as a CEO is third. So when we start talking about partnerships, this is a woman who's a professional. She was running Burberry as the CEO. Now she runs all of Apple's retail. She runs that retail division for Apple Computer. And this woman is not competing with her husband. She's not ignoring her husband. She understands her priorities, and she's good at what she does. So there are women who are saying, I don't need a man, yet here are these women who are CEOs who are married and have their husbands and raising their families, and have their priorities straight. They're clear on what they're committed to. So if women are missing that, if they bought into a different narrative, on our last show, I think you said a lot of women bought into one thing, except, you know, here's all these women going home to their husband and cooking dinner, and they're professionals, and these other women are saying, I don't need a man. So, you know, it wasn't always like that. You know, I remember there being a lot more unity. So we just have a much bigger problem, and I like the broader audience of not just the United States, if we have people listening in other countries, I'd like us to be able to talk about partnership, because if we limit it just to black people, then we alienate people from other cultures who could actually give a perspective that maybe most black Americans have never heard. And so I may have given two examples, and they don't know about this. I also know black women who were CEOs of companies, and they were never married, had to adopt a child. I don't want to go down that path.
Right. Yeah, let me give the number again. I'm going to try to jump to the first call. The number here to the show, give me a second, I'm so sorry. Number to the show is area code 323-642-1387. Again, that's 323-642-1387. We are going to go first to area code 202. You are live and on the air. 202. Hello? All right, maybe one of the people just want to
listen. You know, we get those shy listeners. You know that.
Yeah. And let me just say, you know, because this is kind of like about the third week that this has happened, so I don't know if the message is kind of coming across strong and it's, you know, making people kind of, you know, nervous and skittish. I actually had three people this past week that had told me, like, you know, man, when I finally got up on the line, you know, you guys were saying some stuff and I got scared, and I was like, oh, wow. So anyone that knows me knows that, I mean, you know, I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to, you know, push anybody around. But I do want to help, you know, folks and just kind of help them to see things maybe from a different perspective or maybe tell you that, hey, you're doing things the right way. So do not feel nervous about calling in. So on that note, we're going to go to area code 614. 614, you are live and on the air. 614. Okay, 614, are you there? Okay, so we'll get back to the calls here in just a minute. So,
actually, this can be a really good thing. So if we're saying things that people find valuable, they may rather just listen before they contribute anything. So I think it's good that people sometimes just want to hear what we have to say. We may be offering perspectives that are not commonly known. So, one of the other things that I wanted to say is that people may want to challenge this, and please, sure, you know, call in and challenge it. So I want to talk about sex in a relationship and how it contributes to partnership. So there are stats, and I think you posted this, Blair. Couples who have sex four times a week or more earn more money and have happier relationships than couples who have sex less than that.
Okay.
So anyone who thinks that – if any woman who thinks, my husband just wants to have sex, or our relationship is not about sex. Sex increases the intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex like there's some fiduciary responsibility, like it's my duty to have sex with my husband. I'm talking about, you know, these couples having sex four times a week. They have a level of intimacy. There's a closeness, there's a bond. And that sex starts before they're in the bedroom. Also, they looked at couples who have sex throughout their relationship. long. We're talking longevity. 3 times a week, they lived longer. So a guy named Napoleon Hill, a lot of people may know him from his book called Think and Grow Rich. He wrote that book, I think it was 1938. 1 year before that, he wrote another book called Outwitting the Devil. And that book was so controversial that his wife made him promise that he would never publish it while she was still alive. She thought the church would. So imagine, he wrote that book before Think and Grow Rich. He wrote it the year before, 1937, and it wasn't published until 2011. And in that book, he talks about some of the most, he talks about things that derail people, get them stuck. He interviewed over 500 very successful business people. And we're talking, he interviewed the Rockefellers and Andrew Carnegies and the Henry Fords and J.P. Morgan. He interviewed all those kinds of people, but 500 people like that. And then he interviewed, I think it was about 16,000 people who didn't get what they want from life. They were considered, they failed. So, three things. And so then when he wrote about sex, he said there was only one thing more important than sex in a couple's relationship. And the one thing more important was he called it accurate thinking. So the ability to think accurately was the most important thing that a person could do in their life. Have accurate thinking, not just judging, not just having opinions, not basing everything off your past experience, sort of like what you were saying earlier. A woman has a bad experience, and now she judges this guy inaccurately based on her past. And he said that's what hurts people, inaccurate thinking. So he said accurate thinking was number one. He said the number two most important thing in life was sex, and not like how freaky you could be. People have to get that sex is so important that we can create life with it. But if you think that's all we can create, if sex is just about having a climax or creating a baby, you're completely missing. He talked in detail about how sex recharges the brain. It helps recharge the body. It helps enhance innovation, creativity. These things that it does for the brain and the body, and not even counting the kind of bond that it creates an intimacy between the two people. But sex has a lot of health benefits. And you hear about these guys who get married, and their wife is having sex once a month or not at all, and these are still, young couples at 30, at 40. So people underestimate the value of sex. So if you are withholding sex from your partner, you're kind of like robbing your bank account between the two of you. There's been sort of informal research looking at many of the titans of the world, and including going back to Alexander the Great, Hannibal, and that all of these kinds of hyper-successful people all had huge sex drives. I think even Cleopatra was having sex with like 100 guys in a day or something, or whatever the time period was. So there's nothing wrong with having a very big sex drive. Those people absolutely tend to be successful. So,
I mean, to your point, I mean, sex was, someone said something that was very profound recently, and basically what it is they said sex is all, everything about sex is power, but sex, I think, is how he put it, and I thought that was just so profound. I mean, first of all, when you look at the notion and idea of sex, it's not about just the sex. It's about, like you said, it's about recharging. It's about, the whole notion and idea of kind of reconnecting with that individual, and really just kind of having a certain bond with them. So, I mean, that is part of a relationship, no question. We don't want to put it out there that that's the main focus. But it is part of the relationship, and it's a part of the relationship that is necessary. It's a part of the relationship that, you know, a lot of times even if there are problems in the relationship, that can kind of be the glue and that can kind of be, you know, maybe what pushes you over the top and getting back to a kind of a level of solvency with your partner. So sex is critical. It's very, very important. So let me try to take another call. Again, the calling number is 323-642-1387. We are going to go to area code 404. 404, you are live and on the air. 404. 404, you're live. All righty. So, okay. So maybe it's going to be one of those shows, you know, like we've had the past couple of weeks where everyone's going to kind of flood the lines the last, you know, 30, 40 minutes. So that's okay too. So, but yeah, that's, you know, that's very important. I just think that, you know, we have to kind of get back to, you know, the bottom line is that times are changing. We are going, you know, we are shifting back and going back to more of a traditional family value, traditional family unit in our society. It is not going to be the whole, you know, just kind of whatever you want to do, every, you know, mind your business, everybody does what they want to do. It's not going to be that. It may be kind of trending toward that right now, but it's not going to be that for long. And so what I tell people is, you know, rather than be forced to kind of acquiesce and to be in that kind of scenario, get yourself together now so you're already in the groove and you don't feel, you know, the stress and strain of being in a situation that, you know, you haven't been acclimated to. But, you know, to the women, I just say it's coming. There's no way around it. If you pay any attention to any of the things that are going on in our society, you see that laws are being stripped. A lot of the privileges that a lot of women had in the past of having abortions, they are repealing that now. So pretty soon, it's going to be darn near illegal if it hasn't already been, you know, outlawed somehow. There's just going to be a number of things that are going to make it very interesting over the next, I would say, 3 to 5 years. That I think a lot of women, if you just kind of get in lockstep with your men, it'll just make the situation easier. Nobody's saying, you know, because whenever you speak to men, whenever you speak to women about submission and, you know, hey, do this, automatically I think women default to, well, what he's going to do is he's going to take advantage of it. No, that's not how the majority of men do what they do. The majority of men don't take advantage of the scenarios. What you are doing is taking kind of a composite of some things you've heard, some things you've seen, and you now may not want to do that, but the majority of men don't dog their women, the majority of them. So I just think it's, you know, it's just so imperative for women to kind of understand and see things and to kind of, you know, just really, you know, just kind of get in motion with their men.
Yeah, so actually I like to introduce a tool to people, and if someone is not clear about it, I invite you to call in and ask questions and say all the yeah buts and how about, and tell me if it doesn't make sense to you or why. But I'm going to introduce a tool, and the tool is listening. So a physical manifestation of thought is called a neurotransmitter. And that's a chemical. A neurotransmitter will emit a chemical that goes into your bloodstream and into every single cell of your body. And it tells your cells what you're thinking. It tells you what you should feel and what actions to take. If you look in the case of a man and woman, and if the man says something negative, then her neurotransmitters are going to translate that into something negative, and she's going to do or say something based on the bad feelings, right? And that's pretty obvious.
Right.
But just let's look at it from another perspective. If a man says, I love you, and a woman says to herself, and she may not even know she's saying it, sort of like what you were saying earlier,
Like, people are addicted to certain conversations and don't even know they're having them. So if a man says, I love you, and you say, no, you don't, or I don't believe you, or what is it you want? You must only want sex. Or if she's thinking, you're only saying that so you can take over my life, control, and dominate me, she just, her neurotransmitters just sent out a negative chemical that's now going to be in every cell of her body, and it's going to dictate what she says and how she responds. Her body language is even going to be off. And the guy may be confused because he just, it's for him, I just said, I love you. And she just went through these contortions, and he's trying to figure out what just happened. And she now is thinking something negative. So once she thinks something negative, she now has to defend herself. And she may want to be in this relationship. Let's say, you know, she sees that he's a good guy, except her past experiences say, I can't trust men, or men are bad, or men. Or the prevailing conversation that you hear often in the U.S. is you give up your last name, the man takes over your life, you end up doing nothing, he just dominates you. And if she's going through all that, and this guy really does love her and wants to, you know, create a beautiful life with her, that negative conversation that she's having, and she wasn't born with it, she didn't make it up, she inherited that from, you know, the environment she lives in. And the environment includes movies and books and Cosmopolitan magazine and all that stuff.
Wow.
So
right.
when people don't understand that they're listening to something, so what I'm getting at is it almost doesn't matter what you say. It's where you come from when you say what you say. So if the place you're coming from is that all men want to dominate me, or all men are players, or all men cheat, men only want one thing, if that's where you're coming from, you become a saboteur in your best relationships. And there are lots of men and women who have met a great person, and they just sabotaged it because they were not listening to the person. So in the case the guy says, I love you, she's now not listening to him. She's listening to what that means to her. And what it means to her is he wants to dominate me, or he's not being honest, or she's saying that she's not lovable because someone probably in her family told her that or made her believe that. And,
right.
and that becomes, you know, just some of the nails in someone's coffin in their own relationship. It's where they're coming from when they're listening. So when I say listening, it includes speaking. So to say listening includes speaking is because you're not only listening to the person, you're saying something to yourself about what they said. Like you are making sense. You're putting meaning behind what they say. A man says, I love
right.
you. What that means to you is you want to dominate, or you're going to lie
right.
to me, or you're going to deceive me. So she's not only
right.
listening to him, she's also speaking to herself. And people often don't know how to manage that. And they don't understand why when they meet someone who is good, they end up saying, oh, well, all men suck anyway. And they can't understand how they're sabotaging. You know, same could happen for a guy. If a guy believes all women are gold diggers, he's going to sabotage no matter how great that woman is. Because where he's coming from is all women want to take something from me, and he's going to be on the defense. Now, imagine the guy thinks all women are gold diggers, and the woman thinks all men are going to cheat on me.
Right.
They may be perfectly compatible, except they're in a battle, and they've got their best defense and offense up when it's not even necessary, except they don't know that that's what's happening. So
I think a lot of that also has to do, I mean, the one thing that I think is also, you know, a challenge is when you speak to women about kind of like the type of, you know, when you talk to women about these kind of things, when you ask, like I ask a lot of questions on my page and just in general about submission, you know, are you ready to, are you, when you find that, you know, right there, are you ready to submit? And more often than not, whenever I talk to women about submission or about kind of getting themselves, you know, in the right mind frame, you know, to be someone's wife, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to women and they automatically kind of default to, well, I don't want him dogging me. I don't want him playing me. I don't want him using me and everything. And I think it's kind of sad because really what it is kind of an indictment of how a lot of our women feel about men. Because if I said to you, are you ready to be, are you ready to get in, you know, get in line and get, you know, are you ready to be that person? Are you ready to come in and do the work, whatever? Your answer should be absolutely. And I'll show you where it's wrong. If you went to your employer and they asked you, hey, are you ready to come in and, you know, da 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 and do whatever's necessary and, you know, work the job and, you know, connect and network and everything, you'd be like, man, I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to do this. But when it comes to black men, most of our women don't do that. They automatically come from a negative slant. It's always a, well, I mean, as long as he don't do whatever, as long as he don't start tripping and everything, yeah, maybe I could. I'll do, you know, and it's like, what kind of men are you dealing with that every man that you've come across, you know, you automatically think that from the beginning and from the gate, he's going to be that type of individual. And so this is one of the things that I tell our women is that, you know, you've got to kind of reset your mind. It's one of the reasons why I coach women and try to help them to see a lot of the energy that you put out there may be part of the reason why you're not meeting the kind of quality men that you want to. Because men listen to things you say. They listen to things you don't say. They listen to just about everything. And what they do is they take all that and they say, okay, you know, she did say some kind of, you know, kind of passive-aggressive stuff towards men. And to men, that automatically puts them, you know, puts them in the mindset of thinking, well, she's not going to be a team player. I'm going to have to, you know, drag. I'm going to have her, you know, she's going to be clawing and scratching and everything all the way to us trying to get to some goals. When I'm trying to do this, when I go and I go left, she wants to go right. I want to stop. She wants to go forward. So one of the things that I tell women is be mindful of the energy that you have about our men. Be mindful of the energy that you put out there about our men, because guys watch, guys listen, and what will happen is most men will kind of look at you and say, you know what, I'm cool on her. She, you know, she might be fine, she might be educated and all that other stuff, but I'm not about to align, you know, whatever brand I have, whether I make, you know, whether I make $300,000 a year or whether I make $30,000 a year, you know, I'm not about to put myself and everything about me in line and in connection with this woman because she already has some negative tendencies. So what I just tell sisters, you know, make sure that you're right. Make sure that you're ready. Make sure, you know, the whole idea of partnership is not about, well, you know, only what's in it for me. Yes, you definitely should be getting something out of it, but you also have to understand that there are two people here. And if the guy does not see that this is going to be a benefit for him, more than likely he walks. So I just want sisters to realize that.
Yeah, I was reading this. I was reading something online, and a guy said that he gave two instances of, in one case, it was in New York, and a woman, her, you have to use a card to get on the subway, and her card said insufficient fare. And he said, don't worry, I'll use my card for you. And he was getting ready to swipe it, and he said she looked at him like he wanted something from her, and she was upset with him. And he said, don't worry, honey, I'm gay, so I don't want anything from you. And she said,
wow.
Oh, my God, okay, I'm so proud of you. So she was very positive to him. He swiped and she went in. And another night, he was explaining, it was like his senior year of college, and they were taking these tests, and people, they had parties during the week of tests. And he said he came out of this party one night, and he saw this woman. And he said, ooh, he said, nice dress. He said, wow, you look great in that dress. And she cursed him out.
Right, I could have about to say that.
And he said, honey, you don't have to worry. I'm gay as they come. There's nothing I want from you. And when he said that he was gay, she was with other girls and he was with some guys. They all got together and laughed and joked and blah, blah, blah. So part of what the guy was getting at was, he said, what did you guys do to women to make them so hateful? I was going to pay for the woman's subway. I complimented a woman and she curses me out. So what did you guys do? It's what I'm getting at as the microcosm, the macrocosm, is that kind of conversation is throughout the nation. It goes, it transcends all race, and it doesn't necessarily transcend all socioeconomic classes, but it's gotten most people, and women, and you know, the feminists have made women believe that men were enemies, and we're trying to take something from them. We're in a battle with them, and it just has spilled over into everything. So how do you have a relationship with someone if you believe he's the enemy? Like it's a little bit insane. And when I was saying about what you're listening to, so we've indoctrinated girls and women for decades, and that's the conversation they're listening to. So to say to a woman, are you ready to have a relationship with a man? She's not listening to you, man. She's listening to all the stuff that has been downloaded, almost like in the Matrix when they say, download how to fly this helicopter. They've had this stuff downloaded since they were born.
Right.
And so now you're talking about being, and so there are women who believe men are bad, and there's a guy, he's a French philosopher, he's dead now, but his name is Jean-Paul Sartre is his name. And Sartre said that once a person believes something, they will go out of their way to prove that what they believe is right. So they don't care whether it's right or wrong. They only care about validating it. They care about validating knowledge that makes up their identity. So we all have an identity, and it, you know, race, gender, socioeconomic class, religion, all these things. And there are all these beliefs, all these things we've been told. We've been educated. And the people who educated us, we trust them, right? You know, your parents, your family, your aunt, your grandmother, you trust them. They told you this stuff. And then you reinforced it. You read more stuff to support it. So when something happens, you're just looking to prove that what you've been told and what you believe is correct. So then you will get women who will choose bad guys just so she can say, see, I told you, I knew what they taught me was right. And when she meets a guy that's good, that this is the insane thing. So many women say, I wish I could meet a guy who's different. And as soon as they do, they try to get him to do just like all the other guys have done. One, you're supposed to chase me. That's it. You know, you're a hunter. It's like women are trying to define what a man should do as opposed to getting to know a man. And when a man doesn't hunt for you or chase you, in cat and mouse, that's a whole other illogical strategy to start a relationship.
Right.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you indoctrinate people with something, that's what they're listening to. And when you say something contrary to that, they're going to say, just like you said, but he can't do this. Because what she's listening to is, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. Her interpretation of what you say is men are X, Y, Z. She may not be saying all that, but that's what a man means to her. So it's a problem. And what women are not really paying attention to, a lot of guys are going overseas. A lot.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's, I think because men are, you know, men are kind of getting to the point, you know, and I encourage guys, I don't encourage them to just automatically go overseas, but what I say to them is expand your repertoire and expand the type of women that you are meeting. You know, one of the things that I will say, that I tell men, is that you will be shocked and amazed if you go to other countries where we haven't had a lot of the Western beliefs kind of put onto our women. You'll be shocked and amazed at the level of femininity, the level of submission, the level of all these things that men say that they're looking for that you find from these women. Yeah, is every woman over there going to be like that? Of course not. But the large, you know, majority of them are. Why? Because they haven't been fed a lot of the beliefs that we have here. You know, we have, you know, whether it's through marketing or through media, our women are fed a constant diet of negativity about how men are, about how relationships are, et cetera. And so what happens is they take that into those relationships. They take the entitlement. They take the selfishness. They take the masculine energy and then wonder, you know, why I don't understand why I'm not meeting the kind of quality men I'd like to meet. Well, a lot of it's because of what you've been taught. You know, if you go to jail, you pretty much are going to learn how to operate and do things like people in prison do. So it's only common sense that, you know, if these are the things that are given to our women, that they're going to kind of fall in line with that as well. And this is these are things I tell women all the time. You know, you have to move away from this mindset that you have all the answers, because I say this on the show all the time, if your dating resume doesn't show that you are meeting, and not only meeting, but keeping quality men in your life, something's wrong. You cannot put it on men, because there's way too many quality men who are looking for quality, feminine, submissive type women. Way too many men out here that are looking for that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's imperative to women to just, you know, I tell women, you gotta start looking inwardly. You can't think that it's only just men. You have to kind of do the work and have the humble spirit to say, hey, I may not know everything that I think I know. Stop listening to your grandma. Stop listening to your sisters and your friends and all these women who ain't getting you any sort of traction with the kind of men that you need to meet.
Yeah, I had two people tell me about this one woman. She wanted to marry a professional basketball player, and they said she was fine. She had body. She was gorgeous. Not only was she beautiful, she knew, especially for the team she was pursuing. So she'd go to games. She'd meet the players. She knew all their stats. She knew the stats of other teams. And she never, no basketball player married her. And I think what she didn't get, what she considered to be smart and valuable, if I'm a professional basketball player, why the hell do I need a woman who knows all the stats? I know my stats. I know the stats of my teammates. We even have meetings about stats. And I know the stats of my competing team. So why... What makes you think that's going to add value to my life? A woman who just knows stats. So that's an example of a woman not really understanding what a man would need from a woman. She believed it was knowing all the stats. She couldn't understand, as beautiful as she was, why none of those. And she watched all these other women who didn't know the stats get married. They had the same intention she had, and she played the losing hand.
Wow.
So when you were talking about these women who were in other countries who are feminine, I mean, I dated a woman living in Mexico, and she never worked for a company ever. She had a business. Her mother started a chain of souvenir stores. Her mother died prematurely, and she took over the operation. And this woman was a bull in the ring. She lived in the U.S. for a little bit, but... You want to talk about being independent? And she built her own house, and except her attitude towards a man in a relationship was very feminine, very feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And she for sure understood cooperation. She came to visit me in the States, and, you know, I like eating. I like fine dining. I like eating in restaurants. And I just remember one particular day, she said, no, you waste too much money on restaurants. Like, you got to stop. Like, I don't want to do that. I'd rather cook for you. So let's go home. And so, I mean, this is a woman who understood how to manage money, how to manage business, and she didn't see it being wise to just keep going out and eating. So, you know, I'm a woman. I'll cook for you. I'm not saying that that's what you have to do as a woman, but I'm saying how you manage and engage a man. If you just feel like you're entitled, yes, you should take me here, yes, you should buy me this, you should buy me gifts and all that stuff, it becomes
right.
difficult to build. And that's why I asked the question, so what are people building? What are they looking to build? What are you inviting someone into your life to do? So we've got to have at least one person who has mastered that universe of building a partner. We have to have someone who wants to call in and share that.
Well, let me try to take another call. If you can hold on for just a minute, we're going to go to area code 734. 734, you're live and on the air. Area code 734.
Hello.
Yes,
they have. Okay, 734 just hung up. So I don't know what happened. We ain't. I don't know what to tell people. So, you know, we would love to talk with you. Feel more than free to call in. And, you know, this is kind of a unique situation for us and everything. So let's try to get them on the line again. We got 734 to call back in. 734, you're live and on the air.
Yeah, this is Derek from Michigan.
Oh, hey, Derek. Hey, how are you? Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I don't have too much experience in that part as far as taking it to the business aspect of it. But, you know, when I was with my lady of the past, we opened up a business together. Like, she was a cook, and I was I was the business part of it. And so one thing I will say is that everybody has different talents and different visions, and you have to figure out a way to pretty much use each other's the best aspects of each other. And I've always been a business guy, so you got to get the person to
Hey Derek, you're breaking up. Derek, it's hard to hear you. You're breaking up. Can you repeat that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one second. Can you hear me now?
Oh. Yeah, I hear
you. Yeah,
let's see. Keep going. Let's see if you're clear this time.
Yeah, I think what I was basically just saying is, you know, you have to find a person that's willing to let you use their talents and who appreciates your talents to kind of bring the best out of theirs. I think a lot of people don't really understand that you don't have to have people on the same mindset. You have to have people willing to use each other's gifts and mindsets to move forward, I guess is what – I don't know if you heard what I said earlier, but.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. When you think of a partner, you know, the whole idea of a partnership is – there are supposed to be things that you are strong in and there's things that I'm strong in. And I think
Exactly. You
have to understand, I'm talking universally when I say you have to kind of understand where your strengths are. Like, I'll be the first to say I'm kind of a big thinker. I'm a very much a, you know, large, you know, kind of a large idea person. The details and things evade me. Anybody that knows me knows, like, he is not a detailed person at all. So anybody that's going to be my partner would have to know that, you know what, if you can kind of, you know, make sure the finite details are taken care of, then, yeah, we can do this. But a lot of us don't really understand that. we try to be everything, or we get a partner that does exactly what we do, and they want to do, you know, they want to do what you do. And that's, you know, I mean, there can't be two kings. There has to be only one. And like you said, Derek, I mean, that's part of the reason, I think, why people, and especially for couples, as far as trying to have a partnership, why they fail, because they neglect to understand, you know, kind of how things are supposed to go. I'll give an example, an analogy of, you know, Kobe and Shaq. You know, neither of them could exist without the one without the other, but both of them had dueling assets to one another. You know, Shaq was the rim protector. He was like, ain't nobody coming, you know, within, you know, 10 feet of this rim and everything, or their stuff's getting swatted down. Kobe was, you know, he was the person to stay back from the three-point line and, you know, and did his thing. So, but either of them couldn't do what the other could. Shaq can't guard a three-point line. He's not quick enough or whatever. So you have to understand where your role is. And, I mean, that's a very good point that you made, that, you know, it's important to, you know, kind of know what, you know, in business, know what the other person is good at, and then so you can pull your weight as well. So you're 100% right.
Well, it's interesting that you actually use that analogy, because that's what I was going to respond with, was the Shaq and Kobe analogy. But, yeah, so when I ran my restaurant, you know, I'm more of the big idea person, and I've hustled all my life and things of that nature. So, you know, my son's mom, when we were together, she was the cook. You know, she was the nurturer and so on and so forth. So I used her talents, she used mine. And, you know, I basically took on roles that she didn't want to do, and vice versa. And, yeah, you know, people have to understand that that's essential. You know, everybody wants, oh, if you don't think like this or you don't think like I do, we can't work together. But the problem with that is, if everybody's thinking the same, there's going to be a lot of aspects that's missed, because nobody's, you know, saying everybody's on the same path. I mean, you got to have the same goal, but, you know, people got to be able to, you have to be able to realize that other people bring other things to the table. And I think that's what, especially if you have a dominant personality, you know, if you used to be in the head of everything, that could cause a problem. You know, sometimes people are not willing to loosen up the reins to allow other people to shine and do what they do best. So, you know, it's really about finding balance. And like I said, the Shaq and Kobe thing is a prime example. And then as Kobe started coming up, you know, they start rifting a lot of, you know, they have a lot of rifts, because now, you know, even though everybody's playing their role, now people thinking their roles is a little more important than the other one. So, you know, it's a real fine balance.
Right.
Well, you know, I hear people say that two alphas can't get along. And I have a huge question around that, because human beings are animals first. We're just a subcategory of animals called mammals, and then a subcategory of that called Homo sapiens. So we're animals. And in the animal kingdom, alpha male and female, they get along. So oftentimes you could get someone who's really not an alpha pretending to be an alpha, because the one thing, if you look at a pack of wolves, they have a hierarchy in that pack, and it's clear who the alpha is. Now, just because you're the alpha today doesn't mean someone isn't going to challenge you, and there is a way that the alpha will handle that person. But the deal is, if you're in a pack of wolves, I used to have a dog that was a Japanese Akita. Right? Those dogs are, even though they're domesticated, they're very wild. They're predators. They probably have more wolf in them than any other domesticated dog. So they're pack dogs. And when I bought the dog, they said that the dog is going to challenge you. And I had German Shepherds before, and at 4 months old, that Akita did exactly that. She challenged me. And they said, you have to think like a wolf. And if you're the alpha wolf, the last thing you want to do is fight, because if someone challenges you, if another wolf challenges you and you fight, either someone's going to get hurt or die. And all that's going to do is weaken the pack's ability to hunt, and that creates their survival. So they told me I had to act like a wolf. So when my dog challenged me, I was told to put her on her side on the floor, put my arm like it's my paw over her neck and growl and let her know I'm the alpha. At 6 months old, she challenged me again, and I did the same, and she never challenged me ever after that. She was probably loyal to a fault. So what I'm saying is that, because I left the country and she lost 25 pounds, I was gone for 2.5 years, so she wouldn't eat when I left. What I'm saying is that alphas in a, say, a pack of wolves, and they are very social animals. They understand cooperation. They understand that the fight can negatively impact their ability to survive. So if someone is there are a lot of people who will believe they're an alpha, and if you're a self-proclaimed alpha, you're probably not. You are not going to be a self-proclaimed alpha. You're an alpha of any pack or any group because the rest of the people see you as that. Someone could have given it to you like as a family right, it's a family business, or you inherit the throne. That's different, but that's not the average person. A lot of people are sort of posturing themselves to be that, and that can create huge problems if a person is trying to prove that they're an alpha. Because if you really are, you don't have to prove it. People almost know it when you walk in the room. So I'm often challenged by this idea of saying two alphas can't work together. Because if and Derek, I don't know if you've been on from the beginning or heard our other shows, fluent people, the marriage rate is not dropping. And if you're wealthy and you've worked your butt off and made your way, but you could potentially be very much an alpha and you married a woman who is one, and they're doing what you're talking about. They understand there are roles, we're a team, and they stay together. Now, I heard you say having the same mindset. I would say if two people have the same commitment, that could be an imbalance. Football team and everyone's a quarterback, you probably won't win games with 11 guys who all want to be quarterbacks. So,
right.
But if you have a mindset of winning a championship and annihilating your competition, you just need to have different commitments. One guy's committed to the offensive line. Another guy's committed to wide receiver, running back, all those things. So I think, well, a lot of research has showed in interviewing wealthy affluent people is that they really do have the same mindset and goals, like you're saying. They share values, but their level of thinking and where they come from, where they think, they may have different commitments. And there's a movie called Barbarians at the Gate. It's about a real person called Henry Kravitz, and he bought some company back in the late 80s. And in the movie, there's a scene where they show the guy who at that time was the CEO of American Express, and his wife had her own PR firm. It was amazing to see how they worked as a team. That American Express guy made sure his wife got some account, like a huge account, and the sort of things that his wife did to elevate him. I mean, man, they were a monster team, man. They didn't have the same commitment, but the way they came together and, like you were saying, leveraged or used one another's talent was just, it was extraordinary to see that. And they both can be alphas.
Derek, let me ask you a question. And you said you're in Michigan, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. What I mean, and I don't know if you're able to see kind of things more of on kind of a larger scale. What do you see out there as far as like when you talk to the women that you talk to and you see the relationships of different blacks across the country, maybe even in your kind of your neck of the woods? Do you see kind of a collective where they're coming together? Do you see them building things and kind of making things happen?
or do you see everyone kind of working somewhat individually? You know, the men are like, I ain't working with her. The women are like, I ain't working with him. What are you seeing out there? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's definitely a combination of the two. But I really think it's really who you surround yourself with. So, you know, with my particular circle, you know, saying a lot of my guy friends, we try to find ways to help all of us, like not just men and women.
Uh-huh.
So, like, say, for example, I just, you know, I just got involved with the trucking business, right? And the guy who introduced me, him and his woman started their company together, you know what I'm saying? And it happens to be my son's uncle. So, you know, he introduced me, and then my plan is to, you know, learn it, grow it, and then introduce my family, you know, which so it's more family-oriented as it is instead of just a male-female type of deal. But, you know, as far as the alpha thing, I believe that, you know, if you're a strong-minded individual, you recognize and you appreciate strength. So, like, I definitely believe that two alphas or three alphas or whatever you want to call it can vibe just fine because the as long as the alpha attitude is towards the goal and not towards the individuals, I mean, you know, everybody should be, you know, be able to, you know, because the idea is for everybody to eat.
Exactly.
So,
right. Exactly.
That's a very good way of looking at it because I'll be honest with you and say my belief has always been that, you know, two alphas can't coexist with one another. There has to be someone that defers to the other person because in my mind there has to be someone that makes the ultimate decision and has to take the ultimate sacrifice and the ultimate hit for that decision. So that's definitely a different way to look at it, that, you know, if the alpha aspect of it is actually focused on the goal as opposed to, you know, but yeah, I mean, you're right because, you know, one of the things that we have a problem with doing is always kind of focusing on one another. What are you not doing? What are you deficient in or whatever? So, and I think that's where a lot of our frustration and not able to kind of get to the next level comes from because we're trying to, you know, I think it's because of where we are right now in our society as far as blacks. It's very hard for us to define our roles, you know. It's like, am I a person who I make all the decisions? I may listen to what you're saying, but I'm not going to, you know, defer to you to make any sort of decisions. Or is it kind of a dual decision, and we both come to one understanding? Most men prefer the former. They want to make the decisions no matter what the situation, even if, like you said, even if it may be a scenario where the woman might have a little bit more intellect and knowledge about a situation than the man.
Right.
The men kind of feel that, you know, hey, because I'm the man, I'm going, you know, I'm wearing the pants, I'm making the decisions, et cetera. So you're absolutely right.
Well, I'll give you a good example. So in my son's mind, we're no longer together. But when we were, you know, she made 90% of the decisions. I was head of the household, okay. You know, like, she didn't work, right? So I took care of everything from the bills wise or whatever. She was the homemaker or whatever. But with our son, she made 90% of the decisions. And there were only a few incidents where I would step in and I would, but the thing is, and me and her bumped heads, and I explained it to her, like, I allow her to make the decision because she's a nurturer. She's a mother, you know. But when I do speak, this ain't a discussion. You know what I'm saying? So because my 10% is not up for a debate, it's not a discussion. This is how I feel. This is how we move forward. You know what I'm saying? So, and she allowed that. Like, so we move well because she understood that when I come in and I say what I say, that's what it is. But most of the times I'm going to let her call the shots and do what, you know, what she thinks is best for our son is what I'm speaking on.
Let me ask you this real quick, Derek, because we only have about 5 minutes left. I want to get one quick thought in and then kind of kick it over to Ted. Do you think that that's a very good thought that you have. Thank you. Again, thank you for calling in. The idea that you said that she makes 90% of the decisions, you know, most men would really have a problem with that. They would have a big, huge problem with that. Do you think that a large portion of that is ingrained on, in how, I won't say in, but yeah, ingrained in how men view women? Because if you talk to most women, I always say, when I try to talk to men, I try to talk to them away from other women. Why? Because once you start talking to them in front of men, in front of women, their whole belief and their whole energy changes. If you talk to most men away from women, they will tell you, yeah, I don't think she's as smart as me. And they feel this way about most women. So do you think the idea and the notion that men pretty much dominate and kind of want to rule and make the decisions on their own has something to do with the fact that they don't really trust women to make the right decision? Do you think that might have something to do with it?
I mean, absolutely. So when I say she makes most of the decision, I'm talking like the decor of the house and things of that nature. I mean, intellectually, so education-wise, I believe that I probably was, you know, I was a little more advanced from her from a – but the thing is she's been sheltered, right? So she was married prior to me meeting her, so she never really – I'm not from the street or nothing like that, but I've been in those circumstances where I recognize wolves in sheep clothing and things of that nature where she probably doesn't. So I take on that role, you know what I'm saying, because I know she's not able to move in a world that I'm able to move in as fluently, right? Mm-hmm. But also, and being as I'm a very introverted person, very quiet and very to myself, she's more, you know, outgoing or whatever. So she takes the lead in certain situations when we're, like, meeting new people or whatever the case, you know what I'm saying, because that's what she's best at. So basically we just use each other's talent, right? But playing it forward, now we're not together, but we co-parent down to a science, which is about to, focus on our son, you know what I'm saying? So that same mindset we once had, we focus on our son. So we don't have, we don't argue, we don't do anything. Like, if there's a problem, she called me and I called, you know what I'm saying? So there's always been a mutual respect. But there is a hierarchy, but the hierarchy is not universal in every situation. Sometimes she's the head in certain situations and sometimes I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Ted, you want to weigh in? I think we got about 2 minutes left. You want to get your thoughts before we roll out of here?
So it reminds me of a quote from Steve Jobs. He said, why hire smart people and then tell them what to do? The same. I mean, I get that you're my impression of you, Derek, is that you are smart. You do have great intelligence. And I'm going to make an assumption that when you chose a spouse, you didn't pick just any woman, and it sounded like you had kind of that Steve Jobs, why marry a capable woman and then tell her what to do? You let her make most of the decisions, and where she was strong, you sat back and let her have it, like being extroverted. So I'm like really surprised that you're no longer married. And I know we don't have time, but it's what you're laying out, you know, it sounds like you had a really good partnership.
Yeah, we did. We absolutely did, and which, you know, obviously, the love changes or whatever, but if we were able to, like, we're great, we cool friends. I mean, not like, you know, we hang out or nothing, but if I see a meme that remind me of a situation we had or, you know, some little joke, I'll send it to her, she send it to me, and it's always love, you know what I'm saying? So even, like, if she called me today and was in a financial situation I could help, I would still, and vice versa. Like, if I was in a situation, like, I do fitness, right? And, you know what I'm saying?
Hey,
and I'm
hey,
telling
Derek,
her I need
Derek, I don't,
meal prep.
Derek, I don't mean to be rude, but we probably have, like, 30 seconds left, and it's going
to
shut off automatic. So thanks a whole lot. And the fact that you say you're introverted, thank you even more for picking up the phone and calling us, man. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. Check us next, same time next week, 7 p.m. to 8:30. This has been Straight Talk, and we love you, and good night.
Thank you for calling, everyone. Have a great rest of the week. Take care. Bye.